Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
An area Republican is offering a primary challenge in Iowa House District 28. What's his background? Why is he running? And how is he different from the incumbent, Greg Hartzell? Let's go in depth with John Van Wyk, Sully. So, John, where are you from?
Well, I grew up just west of Oskaloosa and graduated from Oskaloosa High. Later went to Iowa State University, got married after my freshman year of college, stayed in Ames for a while, got my master's degree there, and then back in 2003, my wife and I moved to Clive, and then we've lived in Clive for a while now, and we, in 2010, looked at a building in Sully that was owned by the city, because we were looking at moving our winery, and acquired that building and have spent the last 3 years remodeling it into our new winery. And now the whole family is prepping to move out there, getting all of our houses on the market. So that's why District 28. So
the Iowa House of Representatives, right?
That is correct.
All right. And people should know, people that don't carry around maps in their heads of what the districts look like, could you describe the district for us?
Basically includes most of Marion County, excludes Pella, and then includes most of Lucas County except for two townships there, and that includes Sheridan. Sheridan is not in the district. And then southern Jasper County to include four townships in the southeastern corner of that county. So,
okay, so we're talking Monroe, Reasoner, Sully, Linville, and then it cuts down south and include Knoxville and the rest of Marion County, all south of the river, and then down into Lucas County.
Yeah, down to Lucas County includes Russell and Williamson and a lot of rural area in that county as well. So,
and people probably heard that you lived in Clive and you spent some time in Ames and all of that, but this is really this is where you grew up. You're just coming back.
That's right. I would definitely describe it as that. My dad, he grew up on a farm just east of Knoxville. My grandpa still maintains that farm today. All of my summers were spent on, Red Rock Lake. And so, yeah, this is kind of a returning to the area that I grew up in.
And why run for the House? Why do you want to do that?
Well, I've always been interested in politics, and of course you don't just graduate high school and go off and become a politician. You really have to gain some real-life experience, and that's why I went off to college. My interest in politics influenced my decision to get, a bachelor's in political science, and later I got my master's in public administration. And during all this time, I was working in the corporate environment in Des Moines, and later on, after when I was completing my master's, worked in county government. And now that I've had the opportunity to be a small business owner, essentially really immersing myself into the business of the winery for the past year, that's kind of given me the opportunity and afforded me the time that I needed to look at what kind of politics I wanted to get into. And now that we're moving into District 28, I saw an opportunity to run as a Republican candidate, and of course there'll be a primary. But I don't know, it just seems like a really good area. We're happy to move our family there, and this is, I guess, what I hope to be a kind of a permanent resting place for my family and where I'm going to raise my children. So,
more in depth after this. I continued my conversation with John Van Wyk, Republican primary challenger in Iowa House District 28. Well, can you tell us a little bit about your position on issues?
Well, as a Republican, you can imagine that I'm fairly closely aligned with the Republican platform. I'm, of course, pro-life, and I believe in smaller government. I think that fiscal responsibility is a very crucial key point that we got to focus not only on a federal level, but on a state level. And, you know, I'm a proponent of a balanced budget amendment, you know, forcing the state to absolutely live within its means. And I'm also a huge advocate of gun rights. As a former U.S. Marine, I'm also a range safety officer certified through the NRA. And I do that through Brownells, just east of Linville. So they're at the Big Spring Shooting Complex. So.
A lot of these positions that you've just laid out, and of course I don't know all the details of them, but they sound remarkably similar to the incumbent that you're challenging in the Republican primary, Greg Hartzell. And so if you agree with, well, it appears you agree with a lot of the positions Greg has, why challenge him?
Well, you know, that's one of the fundamental questions of any person that challenges an incumbent in a primary is if you philosophically agree with them on many issues, why run against them in the first place? And, of course, I expect that question from a lot of people as I pursue this. My answer really is, you know, it's one thing to be right on the issues, and it's an entirely different thing to be able to translate that into effectiveness. And it's also very important to, you know, have leadership and statesmanship, and that's what I feel like I really bring to the table. And being able to, I guess, having more pragmatism and having a willingness to really work with my peers in the GOP and build consensus and pass legislation that, first of all, has an actual chance of making it through the legislature and getting signed by the governor. And then, of course, secondly, standing up to judicial muster. You know, it doesn't do us any good to spin our wheels on things if it's never going to get past the legislature, and even if it would, if it's going to immediately be struck down by the courts. So I really believe in making incremental change that overall gets us to the destination that we have in mind.
And you mentioned working with your colleagues, and you mentioned Republicans. What about working with Democrats, working across the aisle?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that you can definitely do that without compromising your principles. Ironically enough, you know, most of my closest friends and you know, a lot of college friends that I still maintain contact with happen to be Democrats. So I'm always challenged on my views just from on a personal level with my friends. And that kind of affords me the opportunity to, you know, challenge myself and why do I believe the way I do. And it allows me to see their point of view. And I think that having that exercise on a personal level really has prepared me to be able to answer those questions and have those conversations across the aisle when the time comes. But certainly I think it's fundamental to be able to work with people within your own party. And if you can't do that, then, you know, then working with across the aisle becomes more of a moot point.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with John Van Wyk, Republican primary challenger in Iowa House District 28.
Well, and so what issues would you like to see at the forefront? You've sort of stated the backgrounds of your platform, but what do you really want to get working on right away that you think that could be successful for both parties that could pass judicial muster, as you say?
Well, one of the things that I know that my opponent has supported is, you know, a personhood, recognizing personhood at conception. And while I might, on a philosophical level, empathize with that, I also have a realization that that'll never make it through the Senate, and that an approach to affecting actual change within the abortion issue has to be more incremental and has to actually have a chance of you know, passing that muster on both the Republican and Democrat sides. So I'd like to see legislation that reduces the number of abortions that does occur, but do it without going to such extremes to, you know, alienate such a large part of the constituency. Another piece of legislation I'd like to see make it through is furthering the rights of gun owners and just citizens in general. One of the pieces of legislation that's been proposed already and is essentially on a back burner at this point is allowing NFA weapons, which is essentially the National Firearms Act that limited or it regulates how certain type of weapons are purchased and registered through the ATF. And I was one of only seven states, as I mentioned, I believe, that does not allow that currently, and I'd like to see that change.
What does that mean for your average hunter, person that uses guns? Is that really anything that matters to us?
I believe on a level of, suppressors is one thing. I think that a lot of people, when they think of a suppressor, they're thinking of, assassins and, shooting, whisper quiet. But really, it's about hearing protection. I'm not sure if anybody has ever, for those of us who go out to the shooting range, we all know that, guns are very loud and they can cause hearing damage over time. And these tools that you're able to use with your rifles and pistols, they don't make your weapon whisper quiet. They barely make it quiet enough that you don't need hearing protection. And that's really what it's about. As a range safety officer, I recognize that one of the things that's a challenge is giving commands on the line that people can actually hear because everybody's wearing hearing protection. And, of course, that's a safety issue as well. So, on the surface, it might look like, this is just another push for loosening gun laws. But if you sit down and actually have a conversation with somebody who knows what they're talking about, I think that most people can be persuaded that this is actually a safety issue and we'll approach it from that standpoint. So,
one of the things that you said is particularly interesting in the sense that you really don't want to spend a lot of time working on things that you know won't pass and that won't pass judicial muster. But people do that all the time. Mm-hmm. They do it purposefully, and they do it in both parties, and they do it to appeal to the base so they are what the base wants. And everybody keeps, especially in the Republican Party, people keep moving further and further and further and further to the right to appeal to the base. And if they don't, they're often criticized for not being conservative enough. And while it seems to make good common sense, especially to those of us that remember when people actually used to do that in the U.S. House and Senate, when they actually used to compromise, it seems like it might be risky in today's political environment. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's really about taking the time to have the conversation with those people who have a very conservative agenda. My agenda is also very conservative, but as I mentioned before, I have a more pragmatic approach to affecting actual change. I mean, would my constituents want me to appease them with a bill that speaks directly to an issue but will never get passed and become law? Or would they want me to approach that issue in an incremental way that allows us to affect change over a longer period of time? I mean, if at the end of each legislative session I can say, we proposed this and we passed this, it didn't take it as far as we wanted it to, but it's pushing us in the right direction. And I think that's really what it's about. It's about moving in the right direction and not just having an all or nothing approach, because more often than not, you get nothing with an all or nothing approach. And so I'm trying to avoid that. I think it's what distinguishes me from my opponent, in that I'm more about taking those baby steps towards our end goal, and that doesn't mean throwing the hot pan in cold water.
Now, as we speak, this interview is taking place, sometime before this airs, and as we speak, the legislature is currently discussing raising the gas tax to pay for our deteriorating roads and infrastructure. That seems that that's something that's on the minds of a lot of Iowans, and I know on the minds of a lot of people in your district. How do you think that we should raise the gas tax to help pay for roads and bridges, or do you see some other way, or do you think the roads and bridges are just fine?
Well, of course, this issue, like any other issue, is something that I really have to read up on and make sure that I'm properly equipped to offer an informed answer. Speaking more in general terms, I'm cautious about raising taxes in general, and the reason I'm cautious is because I think there's so much government waste, and so much is lost in the bureaucracy that between each cent that's taxed to the pump, how much of that is making it to the actual infrastructure that we're talking about. And So while I'm not fundamentally opposed to raising the tax, if that's something that's truly needed to happen in order to improve infrastructure, I would want to first look at what taxes are we already collecting from it and how are those monies being used. Are they being used effectively? Or if we raise the tax, are we just contributing to more waste? And how much of each dollar that comes from that is actually making it to the destination we want it to? So
it sounds like it's not just this issue, it's a lot of other issues with respect to how we are using our money efficiently.
I mean, certainly. I mean, if you look at education, you know, I myself have you know, spent a lot of years in college and grad school, and I have student loans to follow those. And you know, when I look at statistics about how, you know, the average American child is to almost $12,000 is spent per child, and then I look at European countries who score better than we do on standardized tests. And they spend one-fourth the amount of money that we spend, it's not necessarily the question, do we pay enough taxes or do we have enough money? It's how are we utilizing those monies and are we using them efficiently? And I think that whenever you add government into the equation or bureaucracy, those monies are going to be used inefficiently in a lot of cases. And so rather than the answer being raise taxes, it's let's get rid of waste and then utilize the monies that we realize from that towards furthering those programs. And so I would apply that to just about anything, whether it be education or road infrastructure.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listening audience today?
Well, I know it's going to be a challenge, as it is challenging any incumbent within your own party. From what I've heard, I know that Greg Hartzell is you know, a respectable man, and I would hope that those who know me best would say the same about me. So this really is not about challenging someone's character or their intentions. It's about really affecting change proposing legislation and voting for legislation and working with other Republicans in a way that it will allow us to actually pass law that will affect our lives in a positive way. So,
thanks to John Van Wyk for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.